Calling all benders and non-benders alike, dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Son of a biscuit, I gave the lead right back.
Just like that.
I gave it right back. Woof. For those of you that may be new to the Armada and over the past couple of days have heard Zoe and I coming back dog cussing ourselves out and then saying a random number throughout the course of the week, the great one and I play a little game betwixt ourselves, because Rob Brown, being the wonderful, incredible talent that I am, I'm one of the only hosts in America that is trusted with the power, the authority, the responsibility of turning my own microphone on and off. And obviously so is the great one. And throughout the course of the week, we each monitor how many times, because of our enthusiasm, passion for the game, we start talking into a mic that we didn't turn on first. And we keep count throughout the course of the week. And at the end of the week, the winner gets absolutely nothing but a sense of pride that they did not fail more than the other person did over the course of the week. We could not do that on the air, not make it a gimmick, and none of you would ever know that that happened, because you wouldn't hear us, because, again, the mics are off. But you got two dudes that have been in this game for well over two decades and rapidly approaching two decades. Yeah, we hold ourselves to a higher standard.
I'm almost at three, by the way. So
okay, almost yeah. Two decades. And almost three decades, we hold ourselves to a higher standard.
I'm finishing up my 28th year now.
And I am in, what is it, August 6th, September, October. I am now less than 2 months away from starting year 19, ending year 18, starting year 19. So, yada, 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 all that being said, we got a lot that we have been talking about. We got a lot more that we need to continue to talk about here on the radio program this morning. But it is 7:02. You have got less than 58 minutes until you've got to be up, shower, get your coffee, get your breakfast, get dressed, get in the car, drive to the office, sit down at the desk, do like 7 to 12 minutes maximum of legitimate, actual work. And then it's time to talk sports. Then it's time to take that first well-owned, well-earned, all of those things, break of the day, to walk down the hallway, to head to the break room, to find that one coworker that you can tolerate talking to and talk some sports. And if that's going to happen, which we all know it is, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you've got to know what's going on in the world of sports, ladies and gentlemen, worry not. That's why Lonzo and I, every morning just after 7 a.m., do this. It is the water cooler cheat sheet, the top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this morning with your coworkers. When you do, this is what you will be talking about inevitably. Let us dive right in with item numero uno. This was pretty much the topic du jour. That's the soup of the day of the last hour, so we will just hit it very quickly. There is actually one addendum to this story that, Lonzo, you're gonna find this interesting too. And it broke an hour ago, right as we were coming on the air. ESPN is acquiring the NFL Network and other National Football League media assets, including the linear rights to the league's popular Red Zone channel, in a deal that will see the NFL in return get a 10% equity stake in the All Sports Network. That announcement made last night. ESPN will also be acquiring some other elements of the NFL. One of them is the NFL's league-driven fantasy product. If you have been playing your fantasy football through the National Football League website the last couple of years, go ahead and get that NFL account or ESPN account set up for your NFL fantasy team, as NFL's fantasy product will be merged into ESPN, making ESPN Fantasy Football the official fantasy football game of the National Football League. In a separate deal, the NFL also agreed to license to ESPN and other NFL content and intellectual property that will appear on the NFL Network and other assets. The NFL Network will, and I did misspeak on this. I said that they got the linear rights, but not ownership. That is not entirely correct. They do get the ownership rights to the NFL Network, but they will get linear broadcast rights to the Red Zone channel as an aside. So they will own the NFL Network, but it is in return for that 10% stake in ESPN. And by the way, I am not an attorney, nor did I stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night. If you don't get that expression, kids, it's because your parents are old like me. In return for the 10% equity stake, the equity stake means, and I'm bringing this up because it does address a thought that Lonzo had in the last hour about the NFL potentially down the line seeking some level of influence over ESPN, whether it is to gradually acquire more of ESPN and become potentially up to a split partner or more. 10% equity stake. This is my understanding, with the acknowledgement that Rob Brown's a big fat dummy. Equity stake says you have value, you do not have voting rights. You do not have any control. You basically, if we profit, you get 10% of it. If we lose money, you don't, obviously. But you do not have a say-so. So the NFL, if my understanding of this deal is correct, the NFL is handing over ownership and control of the NFL Network, broadcast linear rights to the Red Zone channel over to ESPN. And for the record, if they are just going to own the linear broadcast rights to the Red Zone channel, that could mean, and once again, let me emphasize, I'm a big dummy, so I don't know that I have this right. And since most of the discussion has been happening late last night after your boy was tired from a long, hard day of saying words into a microphone, it's exhausting. I got a lot of research to do about what this means today. But my understanding is if they own the NFL Network, but they only got linear broadcast rights to the Red Zone channel, that would mean, assuming I have the language correct, that the NFL would still run Red Zone Network and therefore be in control of Red Zone Network. The only question would be, did ESPN say to them, we own the linear rights and we're going to broadcast them, but in order for this deal to get done, we demand that we get X amount of inventory, right? Like for us, when we carry a live basketball game, a live football game, the way that it works is we make a deal with the radio company that is producing that game. And they say, we're going to send you the broadcast rights and we're going to build into this broadcast 90 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever, of advertisement over the course of the 5-hour broadcast, pregame, game, postgame. And of that 90 minutes, we get 30 minutes of the inventory to run our commercials and you get the rest. And we make a deal and we say, great. And then they send us a script and they say, at this break, we're going to run 2 minutes commercials. Then you run 4 minutes and then we come back to the game. If that is the case here, the question mark is going to be, if the NFL is retaining the ownership of the Red Zone channel, but handing the broadcast rights over to ESPN, did they reach some sort of deal where ESPN is going to say, we demand X amount of inventory in Red Zone? For every hour, we get 2 minutes of commercials. 4 minutes, 10 minutes of commercials, and you can do with whatever you want with the other 54 minutes of broadcasting, and the NFL says, we're going to do our inventory commercial free. I don't know. What I do know is they get 10% of ESPN's equity in return for the ownership, 3 additional games, and the linear broadcast rights to the Red Zone channel. The other addendum to this story is that as of 1 hour ago, A deal has been announced between WWE and ESPN that will move WWE programming over to ESPN's new direct-to-consumer streaming service. The deal was announced earlier this morning. The deal includes events like WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, Money and the Bank. WWE will produce the events for ESPN platforms, but the platforms will serve as WWE's exclusive U.S. domestic home. As far as I know, this does not impact Monday Night Raw, which will stay on Netflix. It does not impact Friday Night SmackDown, which is on USA.
Right now,
it only impacts the PLEs. I assume this means that their deal with Peacock either has come or will come to its conclusion, or they're going to buy out to move over to ESPN. But effectively, if you're an NFL / WWE fan, like Alonzo and I are, ESPN's new direct-to-consumer streaming service is now an obligatory pickup because they've got the NFL outside of the local network games. They've got the NFL, and now they have every major WWE PLE in the inventory as well. Peacock's about to lose a lot of money. ESPN's about to get a lot more.
Yeah, now I got to figure out, do I keep Peacock or not? Because you can still watch some NFL games on Peacock.
Yep. That's kind of the problem that I'm at now. The wife and I had this conversation the other day. We're like, all right, we're going down to Orlando next year. We're starting to plan out, like, what's our big week-long vacation at the end of next year. We've talked, like, do we go to Ireland? Do we go to Italy? We want to go abroad. We're not going abroad this year. We haven't in a while. Like, we want to go. And I said, what we need to do, because if we're going to do Ireland or Italy or whatever, we're going to need a metric buttload of money. We got to start cutting back. So one of the conversations we had was about, do we start cutting back on some of our streaming services? Because we have all of them. Netflix, Peacock, Hulu, all the other ones. Amazon Prime, Apple TV, we have all of them. And so we're like, we decided to sit down last night and to take inventory of what we are watching on each network, and is that individual show or group of shows or whatever worth keeping, right? And I came to the realization that I can't really right now, unless I want to act improperly, I can't really drop any streaming service because everybody's got something. Prime's got Thursday. Apple TV's got MLS and some MLB games. Sunday night games are going to Apple Plus. Peacock's got NFL games. ESPN. I have to add a streaming service. I got to add ESPN's direct to consumer now because they've got the NFL and WWE pay-per-views. I can't get rid of any of my streaming platforms. It sucks, man. We just have cable now, except I got to eat up a bunch of memory on my Xbox with 19 different apps.
I'm concerned about ESPN because they have the rights to UFC, but you still got to buy the pay-per-view.
Add-on, yeah.
So now are PLEs going away? Is it going back to pay-per-view?
That's a great question. I will be honest with you. That would make me less inclined. If I have to pay you per month and then I got to pay you more to get those, that would make me less inclined. All right, we'll come back to that later on in the show, but we got a couple more things to get to. Let's very quickly get to item number two. We're going to talk about this coming up a little bit later on in the show. Cleveland Browns are expected to start rookie Shedeur Sanders at quarterback. I bring that up as a water cooler cheat sheet item because the Cleveland Browns are taking on the Carolina Panthers on Friday in preseason game number one. Sanders selected in the fifth round of this year's draft. The second quarterback the Browns picked behind Dylan Gabriel in the third round. The two rookies have been in a competition for the QB1 spot along with vets Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett. The Browns also, 2 days ago, added former Pro Bowler Tyler Huntley to the mix. He signed with the team this week because Kenny Pickett has a hamstring injury. Dylan Gabriel has a injury. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. It's early. Shut up. Dylan Gabriel's hurt, and Joe Flacco is 40. So they added another dude to the list. Effectively, Tyler Huntley brought in as a body. Well, Shedeur Sanders, who was dealing with a sore shoulder, has missed some time. According to reports, will be getting the start. Interesting because Sanders has gotten the fewest reps with the team starter so far at training camp, but it was also a hamstring injury for Dylan Gabriel, and the experience of Joe Flacco, who is likely not going to see a lot of action in the preseason just to save the legs, Shador's going to get the nod. What I did find interesting was that earlier this week, there was a Jerry Jones-style post-practice presser with the owner of the Browns, Jimmy Haslam. And they asked about Shedeur Sanders. Because right now, there's been a lot of video where it looks like Shedeur's spinning the ball well. And there's been a lot of video that it looks like he's not. And he's not getting a lot of first-team reps. So Jimmy Haslam was asked, what made you guys want to draft Shedeur Sanders? You already got Dylan Gabriel. What made you want to get this guy? And Jimmy Haslam very quickly said, that wasn't my pick. That was Andrew Berry, the GM. When an owner goes right to, that's not my guy, that was my GM's guy, it's on him, that means the owner doesn't have a lot of faith in that guy as the pick. Shedeur is going to be under the microscope on Friday against the Carolina Panthers. The reason this is interesting is not just because you can say what you want. The story of Shedeur Sanders is going to be an interesting one through the rest of the preseason into the regular season. But on top of that, remember, over the weekend, Dave Canales announced the Carolina Panthers are starting their starters in the first half of the first two preseason games, which means Shedeur Sanders is going to get his first look at the NFL as QB1 on Friday, but he is lining up against the Panthers' number ones starters on defense. This game, to me, just got way more compelling. We'll talk about that later on in the show, but I got to get to item number three. This, I'll give you the nuts and bolts very quickly, but we're going to talk more about it coming up in the next segment. I'm going to be real with you. This is one of those stories that, to some degree, I'm kind of afraid to bring up on the air, because the reality is I think the overwhelming majority of casual football fans, college football fans, because it is a college football story, I think the overwhelming majority of casual college football fans are not going to care about this story on its surface. I don't think it's impactful to you on its surface. I do also think it's a massively impactful story to the future of college football. Major decisions, plural, they will make multiple decisions, by the NCAA's top decision-making body when it comes to finances, litigation, and infractions unrelated to conditions set in the $2.8 million antitrust House v. NCAA settlement. The SEC has been pushing for a number of weeks for the NCAA's Division I Board of Directors. This is the group of suits and ties who make all the decisions that deal with, again, finances, litigation, and infractions that do not go against the House settlement. The SEC has been pushing for the Board of Directors, which do take votes from the conferences, to give the four major conferences, the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12, a 17% voting share. Why is that number interesting? That number is interesting because if a vote comes up for a policy, a decision, an action, litigation, whatever the case might be, if the four major conferences all had a 17% voting share on the board of directors, what it would mean is that multiple conferences would have to band together to say no to a decision or an action. Multiple conferences would have to band together to say no to prevent that action or decision or whatever from being passed by the board of directors. Well, the board of directors decided on a proposal that gives the conferences 16.1% of a voting share. I understand it's boring. Stick with me. At 16.1% of the voting share, that case is not the same now. With a 16.1% voting share, major decisions by the NCAA's Board of Governors, Board of Directors, will now need either approval from all four major conferences or three of them with help from smaller conferences to pass any sort of rules, decisions, actions, whatever. Had they gotten the 17% share, then the Power Four just needed three of them to agree on a thing, and they pretty much got unilateral control, which means if the SEC and the Big Ten wanted this, they just needed to make either the ACC or the Big 12 jump on board, and they got their way. Now, all four must agree, or three must agree, but they must be able to talk smaller conferences in. This is massively important to the future of college football, and when we come back, I will tell you why. This actually hands a little bit of power back to the ACC, to the Big 12, and to all the smaller conferences that play under the FCS banner. I'll tell you why when we come back. I'm Rob. He's Lonzo. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Fan Upstate.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flamio hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reported yesterday by the Associated Press that the NCAA's top decision-making body, top men, the NCAA Division I Board of Directors, has a new voting format. Now, the Board of Directors, and this is obviously something that does not enter the scope of most college football fans, rarely, if ever. The Board of Directors is the number one decision-making body when it comes to finances, litigation, and infractions. Now, infractions unrelated to conditions set in the $2.8 billion antitrust settlement. Obviously, if something falls into the scope of the settlement, it must follow the terms of the settlement. But all other decisions involving the NCAA when it comes to litigation, finances, or infractions run through the Board of Governors. The Southeastern Conference, in a, honestly, like a story that I don't even think we've really brought up, it is kind of floated across my radar a few times. And while, because I'm a big dork loser nerd, well, I very much am intrigued by stories like this, because I recognize the weight of stories like this, not to what happens on the field on Saturdays, at least not directly, but the weight that it carries when it comes to shaping the future of college football, which right now, obviously, although it does for right now feel somewhat stable. Obviously, we got the story about North Carolina last week that UNC is already engaged in conversations to join the Southeastern Conference. There were some other stories about other schools in the ACC that were also engaged in those conversations. I haven't seen any of them come across with the reporting weight behind them that the UNC story came across the radar. But those stories are interesting to me because these are the stories that happen now that down the line will have some level of impact. If and when stuff starts to change as far as making students employees, giving them benefits, allowing them to unionize, etc., all of those decisions will be run through and largely decided on by the NCAA's Board of Directors, as I understand it. With the acknowledgement that I may be slightly off in some aspects, I think that's largely correct. Over the past few weeks/months, the Southeastern Conference, which has recognized, I think, the weight, the power that it holds to influence college athletics at large, the SEC was pushing for it and the other three power conferences, the Big 10, the Big 12, the ACC, to to receive a 17% voting share in the decisions that are to be made by the NCAA Board of Directors. With a 17% voting share split between the four conferences, they would have, and this is, again, this is all according to the AP results or AP story that came across last night. With a 17% voting share, the three of the Power Four conferences could agree on a decision, action, course of action, litigation, whatever. And all they needed was three of the four power conferences to agree, and they would have had 51% of the vote, enough to pass whatever it is that they agreed on. That means that the SEC, the Big Ten, they both want a thing to happen. All they have to do is convince either the ACC or the Big 12 to get on board. And they would have gotten their way. Well, yesterday, the decision was made to hand each of the four conferences a 16.1% voting share on the NCAA Board of Directors. That 16.1, if you multiply it by 3, equals 48.3. Meaning that one of two things has to happen for a policy or decision to be approved by the Board of Governors. Either A, all four of the power conferences have to agree to the thing, which means that the little conferences don't have a choice, or three of them have to agree, and they will have to get the votes of one of the other conferences to go along. So if the Big Ten and the ACC wanted a thing, and let's say the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big Ten, the SEC, and the ACC want a thing. If the Big 12 does not want that thing, if they look and they go, this hurts us disproportionately, we are not voting for it, that thing will not pass because they will only have a 48.3% vote share, which means that the three conferences in our hypothetical example here, the Big Ten, the SEC, and the ACC, they would have to talk one of the smaller conferences in. I believe that in the shaping of college sports moving forward, this is actually a good thing. And I believe it is actually a good thing because now it hands a little power back to the smaller conferences. And when I say smaller, I do include the ACC and the Big 12 in that. But I also include the Mountain West and you know, those conferences, the Pac, whatever they are nowadays. I include those conferences. Because if the SEC and the Big Ten want a thing to happen, if the ACC and the Big 12 look at each other and they go, that's not good for us, they can join against it. And now what they have and what the smaller conferences have is the ability to play politics with the two entities that have the most power, the Big Ten and the SEC. It allows them to say, you need two more votes in order to have the Board of Directors approve this thing that you want approved. We're willing to play ball, but what are you going to give to us, right? You've all watched political movies over the years, and you have all seen how politics on Capitol Hill plays out. Freshman senator from Montana wants to pass a bill that says X, Y, and Z. And in order to get the votes, the sophomore senator from Wyoming says, hey, I'll vote for you. I will vote for your bill. But if you want my vote for your bill, what I need you to do is I need you to guarantee me that you are going to vote for my bill. And maybe that bill isn't as good for the fine folks of Montana as it is Wyoming, but the bill that he really wants to pass is. So he goes, I'll trade your votes. Absolutely. Now, it's kind of that, but the NCAA Board of Directors. The SEC wants a thing. The Big Ten wants a thing. They now have to figure out how to get the votes for a thing that maybe doesn't benefit the smaller conferences, including the ACC and the Big 12. Maybe it doesn't quite benefit them the way that it benefits the two big conferences. So they will have to go to Jim Phillips and say, we need your vote. And in return for your vote, if you give us your vote on this thing that we want, we will give the ACC this. We'll give you this consideration. We will support your next proposal of this. It lets them play ball. It also says that if the B1G and the SEC want a thing, and the ACC and the Big 12 band together and say, absolutely not, that's not good for us. We're not the little guys, but we're not the big guys. That's not good for us. The SEC could theoretically reach out to all of the small conferences, the MAC, whatever, the big, whatever conferences, the smaller conferences you want to lean on here, could reach out to all of them and say, look, we need y'all to support this thing in order to get by the ACC and the Big 12. And if you, smaller conferences, will agree to this, we will agree to blank. To mandate that some of our big schools play a paycheck game with you, or that we will pour X amount of dollars into your conference for whatever purposes you need, whatever. I like this because you did not just lay down for the SEC and the Big Ten. You actually gave a bit of power to everybody else, including the ACC and the Big 12. More access, more power to everybody else means that while the SEC and the Big Ten have all the money, they don't just get to unilaterally say, this is what happens in college sports, and I think that's a good thing. All right, now let's talk some actual football, some X's and O's, some Jimmys and Joes when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flameo hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Hot Rod Brown Show. Back on your radio. I'm Hot Rod Brown. He's the great one, Lonzo. Hot Rod's such a dope name. I can't tell you how much I absolutely love that Mr. Deep Voiced Announcer guy saying what he said, either accidentally or on purpose. We don't really know yet.
I think we do know. I think we do know.
We both want to think it's on purpose.
My understanding is that he is blind, which means
he may have actually seen
Rod. It means that someone wrote Rod.
Also a possibility. I mean, did they write in cursive? Because, the D and the B in cursive, very similar.
I don't know how it works. The fact that I don't know if he has a translator. I've seen those before where they
translates. My phone will read messages to me. I just push the button. If I don't want to pay attention, push the button and it'll read it out loud. I wonder if that's it.
So I'm just saying the powers that be are messing with you.
Possibility. Listen. Yeah. Terrible prank. Make people call me Hot Rod. That's awful. I hate that. Definitely don't call me Hot Rod.
Don't try to reverse it because he'll find another way.
I think the next custom team jersey that I get, I think I might put Hot Rod across the back. Instead, I put Rob Brown across every jersey. Because I'm an attention hog who loves going to sporting events and having people come say hello. If you see me at a sporting event, come say hello. I love it. So I put Rob Brown across the back for that reason. I might have to go with Hot Rod across the next jersey. I might have to. I got another Greenville Triumph jersey that I'm ready to pick up. The alternate jersey this year. It's got a collar on it. It's a polo shirt. Oh, I love a collared soccer shirt that I got to get made and customized. I might throw the 3 and Hot Rod on the back of that. We'll see. Hey, Dave Canales, have you heard of this guy? Why did I just turn into a late night TV show host? You heard of this guy, Dave Canales? Dave Canales is the head coach of your Carolina Panthers. The Panthers, of course, are taking on the Cleveland Browns in preseason game numero uno on Friday. The big news story about that game right now is that the Browns have not officially announced, but sources, hashtag sources, hashtag trust me, bro, out of Cleveland are reporting that the plan right now is for Shedeur Sanders to get the start at QB1 on Friday. And this is not a Shedeur Sanders take. I'm just giving you the setup to talk a little bit about Dave Canales. The belief is Shedeur is getting the start. And the reason that is interesting is because obviously Shedeur Sanders had aspirations of being the first quarterback off the board in the NFL draft. Not only was he not, he wasn't even the first quarterback on the team that drafted him. They got Dylan Gabriel out of Oregon. Well, Gabriel has a hamstring injury. Kenny Pickett, the vet they brought in to compete with Shedeur and Dylan Gabriel, he has a hammy injury. And Joe Flacco has a I'm 40 injury. He's not going to see a lot of the football field in the preseason. And so while they did bring in Tyler Huntley, it is expected Tyler Huntley was just brought in effectively as a body to give them some more dudes that can throw passes. Now, let's keep it a buck. How hilarious is it if Tyler Huntley comes in and outduels Shedeur and Dylan Gabriel? That'd be the most Browns thing to ever happen. But blah, 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 blah. The story of Shedeur Sanders is going to be interesting, especially considering Dave Canales, head coach of the Carolina Panthers, said over the course of the weekend that the plan as of today is that the Panthers will play all of their starters for the first two quarters, the first half of the first two NFL preseason games, including Friday. Meaning, Shedeur is going to get his first NFL start. It is a preseason start, but his first NFL QB1 action against an NFL starting defense. This is interesting because it's going to be interesting to see what Shedeur does for the Browns, A. It is also going to be interesting to see what the Panther defense looks like because we have talked quite a bit about the offense. We've done a couple of segments on the defense. By the way, Derrick Brown, who is expected to return, has been sitting out from practice the last couple of weeks. Last couple of days because of bruised ribs. And as somebody who has been there, done that, that sucks a lot, and I get it. Derrick Brown, take your time, all right? Cousin to cousin, take your time. Get right. Blah, 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 Dave Canales.
Oh, because Brown and Brown. Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
You there. Dave Canales was on Up in Adams, the TV show / podcast.
I looked up earlier. I think it's FanDuel that she's with.
Okay. I think you're right. I think you are correct. Hey Bay, K. Adams on the Up in Adams show, which, by the way, top tier podcast name, right? Up in Adams, top tier. Top tier. She sat down with Dave Canales live from Panther training camp in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he gave some clips, some quotes, some sound bites. We're going to listen to a couple of them over the next couple of days, but I will say this. I like Dave Canales a lot. I've explained that one of the reasons that I very much like Dave Canales is he has traditionally been a coach that while he does speak in coach platitudes, very frequently, I like Dave Canales because when people ask him football questions, he talks ball. He talks X's and O's. He talks formations. He talks football. And as a dude who wishes more head coaches would talk football, I appreciate that a lot. So, hey, Bay K. Adams, ask Dave Canales, what is, in your opinion, as the head coach of the Carolina Panther football team, what is the difference between this year and last year through this camp so far? And I didn't change my daggum sound over because I'm not playing it through my soundboard. So what I'm going to do is reset that and ask the same question. Kay! So I talked about this yesterday. The reason I played that clip, and that clip is, as I mentioned, that's a long string of coaching platitudes, right? We got great guys. They play hard. We're trying to build the foundation. We're trying to develop, you know, the blah, blah, blah. Yeah, everything that every coach of every team at every level has ever said when asked about their football team's offseason. Cool, sure, fine, whatever. I'll tell you what jumped out about that clip to me. Yesterday, I was mocked, and appropriately so by the great one for doing, I went on a run. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you are more than aware that I love drawing comparisons to things across the landscape of football. Ordinarily, it's like food relationships, but old Robbie B, the big history nerd that he is, I like drawing comparisons to history sometimes. I won't go on the whole tangent again, but I made the point yesterday that one of the things that I look for is a coach who listens, who takes into consideration other people's opinions. George Washington, father of the nation, not a great battlefield commander. In fact, was actually kind of bad as a battlefield commander. The reason George Washington was able to successfully guide the Continental Army to a victory in the Revolutionary War was not because George Washington won a lot of battles. In fact, he didn't. He got his ass whipped more than he didn't. The reason he was able to win was because he listened to his NCOs, his junior staff, his war cabinet, when they said, here's our ideas. And he put them into the plan. And he had to be talked into a couple of things. He had to be talked into the run and fight, fight and run strategy. Hit, get out. Hit, get out. We're never going to win a battle, but we're never going to be decimated either. And at the end of the war, when they had all but cornered the British Army at Yorktown, Virginia, George Washington wanted to, at the time, uproot the entire army from the south, march them north, and try to take back New York City. And he had to be talked into, by the French predominantly, had to be talked into, no, you have them cornered at Yorktown. The French Navy's here, they boarded in the bay, capture this army. That is half their battlefield, take them. And Washington said, okay, if that's what y'all want to do, that's what we're going to do. And it ended up winning them the war. The reason this clip stood out to me is twofold with Dave Canales. Number one, kind of sounds like that's the coaching strategery mentality that he's brought into this. Kay said, what's the biggest difference from this point last year to this point this year? And that's a spot where Canales could have talked about football, could have talked about anything, could have talked about tactics, could have talked about player personnel, and he got into that a little bit. But I think what he really got into that piqued the old ears of one Rob Brown is that he led with, I feel supported. I got a staff. I got dudes. There were a lot of dudes here that weren't my dudes when I got here. I got a lot of dudes here that are now my dudes, and they understand who we are, what we're trying to do, what our culture is, the fingerprint we're trying to put on this program. That's the type of successful coach that you're looking for. I mentioned yesterday that Nick Saban, you know, oh, very few coaches can run like a dictator. Nick Saban, for the record, Nick Saban wasn't really that guy. I mean, he was a dictator. At the end of the day, the team's going to run based on his decisions and nobody else's. But there was a running gag about Alabama for years of Nick Saban's rehabilitation home for fired coaches. Because how many fired head coaches ended up in Tuscaloosa working as an analyst or a quality control coach or this coach? They all went there to learn from Nick Saban and rehab. And a lot of them went on to another job down the line. And I think that there's some level of significance to that. I think Dave Canales in this speech kind of showed this isn't a dude who is going to say my way or the bleeping highway. That's what Matt Rhule did. It went real bad. My impression, though he was never really entertaining enough to like listen to very much, that's kind of the impression I got on Frank Reich. Like, I'm the quarterback whisperer. It's my way. Matt Rhule doesn't seem to be playing the game that way, and I appreciate it. But I think it also harkens back to that clip on The Blueprint, the Carolina Panther YouTube series from draft night, where the Cardinals rescinded the offer that they had previously made to Carolina for the number 8 pick if Carolina went on the clock and Ted Arroyo McMillan was still there. They did. He was. They called Arizona. You guys still good? Zona said, actually, we're going to walk back that trade a little bit. We're gonna take some off the table. And after Dan Morgan had that conversation, he, Canales, and Brant Tillis, the VP of football, looked over at Dave Tepper. And Dave Tepper, in that clip, I made a big deal of it because it felt like a big deal, sat back, crossed his arms, and kind of gave him that nod. Like, do your thing, football guys. And then that staff of guys, Morgan, Canales, Tillis, and all their little scouts and underlings there, they all went, nope, we like McMillan. Pull the trigger. Go get the guy. I mean it. I said yesterday on the show, I run it back. And we're going to break down the other opponents in the division later. I don't have expectations for the Panthers of compete for the NFC South. My expectation is now to win it. And the more I'm hearing out of Canales, out of the coaching staff, out of Dan Morgan, etc., the more I feel confident that I'm going to look like a big, fat, stinking genius at the end of the year. We'll talk about the rest of the NFC South later on in the show. We will talk about some of the biggest events going on right now in sports right now on the show with Lonzo Sports Flash.
Yeah, we'll see how they look Friday. The Atlanta Braves dropped game two of a three-game set with a 7-2 loss to Milwaukee last night. Joey Wentz took the loss, giving up 7 hits and 5 runs in 5.1 innings with 3 strikeouts. Atlanta had 8 hits, but went just 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Greenville native Eli White had an RBI double and a solo home run, his 7th of the year. In a major acquisition, ESPN is buying the rights to the NFL Network and other National Football League media assets, including the rights to the league's Red Zone channel. In return, the NFL will get 10% equity stake in the network. ESPN will also take over the NFL's fantasy football assets, merging them into the ESPN portfolio. ESPN will also add 3 more NFL games per year, bringing their total to 28. That's the most I've said ESPN in a long time. Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones would not comment on the availability of edge rusher Micah Parsons after practice yesterday. Jones said a large part of the decision is with Parsons himself, just days after he requested a trade.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Dive into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar, Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney, the voice of Avatar Korra.
And me, Dante Bosco, the voice of Prince Zuko.
Each week, we'll explore a new episode of The Legend of Korra.
Find your balance as we uncover breaking news, trivia, special guests, and so much more.
I mean, I've got some flamio hot takes that'll really light a spark. Follow and listen to Avatar Braving the Elements on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.